Oh, we've been hearing that anthem a lot. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Joan Ledeau, and we're talking about Special Olympics Wisconsin today. Our guests from that organization are Chad Hirschner, president and CEO, and Brittany Wilson, an athlete leader. Wondering how you can volunteer or help out with Special Olympics Wisconsin, or have you been to one of their events? Well, we want to hear from you. Our number, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Brittany, Chad, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. Well, let's start off, Chad, with give us a brief history of the Special Olympics Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Well, Special Olympics as a global movement was founded by Eunice Kennedy Shriver in 1968, and Special Olympics Wisconsin was founded shortly thereafter in 1972. So we have been working with athletes and individuals with intellectual disabilities all across Wisconsin for more than 52 years now.
That really is amazing. And what's the mission of your organization?
So our mission is really to provide a place where individuals with intellectual disabilities can come together through sport to create that sense of belongingness, connectedness, and community. And certainly a lot of people think of Special Olympics as a sports organization, and we do so much more that we're excited to share with you some of that today as well.
Wonderful. And before we get any further, Brittany, why don't you tell us what you do as an athlete leader?
There's a lot, and it's really, really cool. It starts at the local level with the Intro to Athlete Leadership and Understanding Leadership workshop. And once you complete that, the world is your oyster at that point. You can get called to Hill Days with Chad, or you can do speaking engagements, or you can teach a workshop.
Or you can, you know, be on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Right? That too. You can also be on the SOE board as well.
Okay. And SOE stands for? Chad, go
ahead. Special Olympics Wisconsin Incorporated.
Okay. Incorporated. All right. And in case anybody's interested in learning more, we do have a link to your website on our website, which is WPR.org/Larry. You just look for this episode. But it's I think it's not even that, is it? SpecialOlympicsWisconsin.org. So it's pretty simple.
That's right.
It's very simple. I have it in front of me just in case. So, Chad, how many athletes actually participate every year on average?
So we have more than 14,600 athletes and participants that take place in just Special Olympics Wisconsin annually.
Oh my gosh. How do you keep track of all of that?
Well, again, we are a grassroots organization, and so we have amazing volunteers around the state, and we have lots of what we call local programs. So if an athlete lives in Ashland or Milwaukee or Appleton, they have a local program that they are a part of, and that's kind of the place where they first engage and connect for sports that they do there.
Okay. So what area are you active in, Brittany?
I'm in the Milwaukee area.
What brought you to the organization in the first place?
Two friends I went to college with. I get asked this a lot. Two of my friends I went to college with went to my sister and said, hey, tell your sister she should join Special Olympic sports. We had a ball and she'd have one too. And 7 years later, I'm a unified facilitator.
I love that. Is your sister still participating too?
Oh, no, she's my top tier supporter.
I see. I understand. So what sports are offered through Special Olympics Wisconsin, Chad?
Well, we have 19 different Olympic-style sports. So our youngest athlete at Special Olympics Wisconsin is 4. Our oldest athlete is 94.
Oh my gosh.
So we have sports in a variety of things. Right now, our teams and our athletes are focused on our fall sports coming up for fall games. So everyone is doing bocce, softball, t-ball, flag football right now. But we do everything from cornhole to swimming to basketball. We are Wisconsin, so bowling is still the most popular sport. with our athletes, and then a lot of athletes love to do track and field as well. And like Brittany, many of our Special Olympics Wisconsin athletes are multi-sport athletes. So they don't do just one sport a year. They may do three or four, or, you know, one with every season that we offer.
So which ones do you participate in, Brittany?
I participate in basketball, soccer, track and field, bocce, volleyball, and bowling. Oh, I even retired from soccer last year with a third place bronze medal.
Nice. I guess you're going to go out on top, right?
Yeah.
That's great. I love that. So, you know, as you had mentioned earlier, Chad, you know, you're more than just a athletic organization. So what are some of the other things that you provide for the people who are benefited from Special Olympics?
Absolutely. So we have really four areas of focus for all of our mission-based programs, the first being sports. Another one is inclusive health. So a lot of people may not realize that Special Olympics as a global movement is the world's largest public health organization for individuals with intellectual disabilities. So here in Wisconsin, we have 8 free areas where we provide health screenings to athletes, where they can get checkups, they can get referred to care. So it can be in dental, it can be in mental health, it can be in general nutrition, it can be opening eyes. And we have a great partnership too in audiology with Hear Wisconsin. So those are some of the areas. And again, we really want to keep our athletes in tip-top shape so that they can compete at their best. And I know Brittany has an amazing health story personally about how she's broken a generational cycle and taken and improved your health. So,
oh, wonderful. Let's hear it, Brittany.
So I have high blood pressure and I'm pre-diabetic right now, although my A1C is very under control at 5.2. I have a family history of diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you name it. And I decided that I don't want my health to get the better of me. So 4 years ago, I started my weight loss journey, and my blood pressure's under control. All my blood work's under control, and my A1C is at 5.2, and I lost a total of 66 pounds in 4 years.
That is amazing. Wow. Well, I admire you greatly, Brittany. That takes a lot to do that. Discipline, for sure. And how has the Special Olympics made that journey for you easier?
The fitness exercises at the practices help. Plus, when I play sports, I'll lead what's known as popcorn exercises, which is like popcorn reading, where you read a passage and then you pass it off to someone else. I'll name an exercise and then I'll pass it to another athlete among the athlete circle with the sports we play.
Okay. Has that your journey helped anybody in your family with those health problems also?
Actually, it helped 2 of my friends that I play sports with.
And so it's Chad, you've heard these kinds of stories a lot, I'm assuming.
We do. And we hear these stories every day. You know, I think too of just some of the work that we do in dental care. We have a great partnership with the Marquette Dental School, Delta Dental, and we'll do dental screenings at our various events. And sometimes we find a lot of needs that are really emergent. We have some dentists that actually close their practices on a Friday and open up to provide free dental care to our athletes. And so we call that our Special Olympics Gives Athletes a Smile Day. And those dentists will provide $25,000, $30,000 worth of free dental care that otherwise athletes wouldn't receive.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yes,
that's wonderful, because we all know it's hard to find a dentist these days anyway. So
It is. So we had, I was mentioning earlier about our partnership with Here Wisconsin. So they bring their mobile audiology bus to a lot of our state games and competitions. We have one athlete who is a swimmer and has been an athlete for many years. He went and did the initial hearing test and screening and was referred to get some assisted devices. And Steve came back to me and he said, "Chad, I didn't know that water made sound."
Wow.
And Steve is 43 years old. So that's an amazing gift through the partnerships that we have to, you know, support our athletes.
That's amazing. I had no idea, and I'm sure most of our listeners don't either. Tell me now, so the games that you hold, they're 4 times a year from what it sounds like. Is that right?
Yes. So we do spring, summer, winter, fall games. Mm-hmm. We also do bowling as a standalone tournament that takes place in Wausau, because last year we had over 1,200 athletes join us just for bowling. And then we do our state golf tournaments and state volleyball separately as well. So, yes.
Okay. And so then everybody from the state, that do you have to qualify, or how do you get to the state tournament?
Correct. So there is qualification that takes place. So right now we have athletes that are qualifying and competing in their regional competitions for softball, bocce, to get to state. So we have the qualifying tournament coming up this weekend in Onalaska area in Wisconsin. We just had one last weekend in Appleton. So once that's all compiled, then those athletes will join us in Wisconsin Dells for our fall state games the weekend after Labor Day.
And I'm assuming anybody can come watch?
Absolutely. We love spectators. Right, Brittany? You love having fans on the stands there to cheer you on. And the other thing, too, is we always need volunteers. So we have over 5,000 individuals that volunteer every year for Special Olympics Wisconsin. Some volunteer for just the day of events, whether it be regional competitions or our state games. Others volunteer and sign up to be coaches. So lots of ways to become involved. It's a great way to bring your family members out to volunteer, to get coworkers together to come and join you as well. So we're so fortunate to have such a robust pool of volunteers.
Brittany, what's it like at those competitions for you and for some of your friends who are competing?
It's really great because it's a sense of inclusion, because we, Special Olympics Wisconsin, prides on inclusion, which brings me into the inclusion campaign, which I was a part of with 4 other athlete leaders, that 2 were a part of it, and they all did a wonderful job. And we all have the same inclusion story, where we want to be included, but we never felt included until we joined Special Olympics. Once we're grandfathered in, the inclusion movement begins right off bat with the first sport you play in.
And what does that entail, Chad?
So really, it is, again, our vision, too, is to break down the stigma that exists for sometimes individuals with intellectual disabilities, and to create that place where everyone is seen, valued, and included. So, you know, there are no labels at Special Olympics Wisconsin. Everyone gets to show up, be their authentic selves. And that's one of the things I love about our movement, is all are welcome, all skills are valued, all perspectives are valued. And it's truly what I hear from our athletes. This is their family. This is their community. This is a place where they feel valued, heard, respected, and a place where they can thrive. So really transformational work that we get to do each and every day.
That's wonderful. Our guests today are from Special Olympics Wisconsin, and they are Brittany Wilson, an athlete leader, and Chad Hirschner, president and CEO. Do you have a question for either of them? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And please stay with us the full 2 hours today, because coming up at noon, we're going to hear from a member of Team USA's men's wheelchair basketball team. And then it's a roundup of the latest results from Wisconsinites at the Olympic Games in Paris. So, Brittany, have you been watching the Olympic Games from Paris?
No, I haven't.
You
actually
haven't? No, okay.
No.
You don't want to see what they're doing over there. You just want to concentrate on your own efforts.
Yes, I'd like to concentrate on my own efforts. Plus, okay. I'm a huge wrestling fan, so I've been watching wrestling all weekend.
Okay.
Meanwhile, in our household, we've been watching as much Olympics as we can possibly consume. So some amazing moments, and I just love it.
So inspirational. What was your path to become the CEO of Special Olympics, Chad?
So my entire career has been working in the nonprofit world in various organizations and executive capacities. We have a friend of ours who has been a Special Olympics Wisconsin athlete for 10 plus years. And so we were on the sidelines watching Kenzie compete, hearing the difference that Special Olympics made in her life, the role that it played in their family. And one day I got a call from a search firm saying, Special Olympics Wisconsin is looking for a new president and CEO. Would you be interested, or anyone you know? And I paused and I said, this is me. Like, this is something that I could really get behind. And that was more than 2 years ago. And this truly is home. I mean, it is the best job. I wake up every morning going, I get to do this and work with amazing individuals like Brittany, our other athlete leadership council members, our phenomenal board. It's just a real treat to do this every day.
And Brittany, do you feel the same way, waking up every morning, that you get to participate in this organization and what they do?
Yes, I do. I was just telling the Medical College of Wisconsin nursing medical students that with all the leadership opportunities I get, my head is spinning on a metaphoric swivel. And it's already hanging off of a thin swivel, and my head is just spinning out of control, about ready to fall off, and it's so worth it.
Right. Yeah. Brittany was just referencing, so one of the things we focus on as part of our health programming is training and providing education to medical providers and med students on how to work with individuals with intellectual disabilities. Because what we've learned is in medical school, typically, they only received about 20 minutes on how to work with individuals with ID. So Brittany, along with a fellow athlete leader, PJ Lynch, had just done a presentation the other day to Medical College of Wisconsin. A friend of mine I know who was a med student there was in that session, and Parker texted me after that and said, wow, they were incredible. I signed up to volunteer next week at MedFest, one of our Healthy Athletes events. So Brittany and other athletes are out there sharing the message and the story and inspiring people every day.
And obviously doing a really wonderful job. Was that pretty much the reception you got from most people, Brittany, when you spread the word like that?
Yes, I do. Yes, it does. And in fact, that's not the first time it's happened. The first time it happened was at the Waukesha Expo Center when I spoke to the Joint Finance Committee 2 years ago.
Were you scared? Because that sounds kind of scary to me.
Well, with the Waukesha Expo Center, when that opportunity first came about, I'm like, how am I supposed to sit on stage and speak to the Joint Finance Committee? But once I got there and saw the lay of the land and the seating, it reminded me of my church background, and I give kudos and brownie points to my church background for the leader I am today.
Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Have you found that to be the case, Chad, where your athlete leaders are just so prepared to step into these circumstances?
Well, and I think what I love most is seeing the journey of our athlete leaders. So we have some members that serve on our athlete leadership council. Athlete leadership is one of our other mission pillars, obviously. And they may start out and they may be very reserved. They may be someone that's more comfortable having one-on-one conversations. And through their engagement, through their growth and confidence, through extra training that we provide here in Wisconsin as well as nationally, they just blossom and flourish and thrive. Mm-hmm. And they are then giving presentations at their workplaces. They are then joining me and talking at Rotary clubs around the state. So, you know, people can hear from me anytime, but it's really the athletes that are the heartbeat of the organization, and just seeing them thrive and have that confidence is so inspiring.
Now, you're talking about finances. So how are you funded?
So we exist thanks to the generosity of others. So, you know, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and 100% of our revenue comes from contributions. So we've received some support through some grants for our health programs, our education programs with our Unified Champion Schools, as part of being part of Special Olympics North America. Primarily, the rest of the resources comes from individuals, businesses, foundations, and grants that we receive all across the state of Wisconsin.
Do you find it hard to get those resources?
It's always a challenge, obviously, you know, when you are a nonprofit organization. And I think once people are connected to the mission, know an athlete, understand the importance that we do, not only in sport, but health, and in Unified Champion Schools, and in athlete leadership, once they're connected, they almost become donors and supporters for life. So we are so blessed by those individuals that support us each and every year, and every dollar matters. So if somebody can only give $25, that's phenomenal, and we put it to work. Mm-hmm. So we're so fortunate for all of our partners and all of our donors.
Have you been involved in some of that fundraising, Brittany?
Yes, I have, actually. We had an auto show gala 3 years ago at the Baird Center. Mm-hmm. That was pretty fun.
Yep. And all of our Athlete Leadership Council members, they also support Polar Plunge, which is our largest Special Olympics Wisconsin fundraiser. And I think, but Brittany, this past year, the members of the Athlete Leadership Council raised more than $11,000. So they did a great job. And I know, Brittany, you were part of that too.
Yes, I was.
Did you also jump in the cold water?
Well, I was supposed to, but I had to take the Athletes as Coaches workshop that day at headquarters in Madison.
Okay. I think that's a good excuse. I don't think I'd be jumping in that ice water, though. What about you, Chad? Have you done that?
I have. I did it the first year after I started. And initially, it was our marketing person at the time said, Chad, do the Milwaukee one. It's the last plunge. It will be the warmest day of the year. It was -4. And windy and snowing, and the lake temperature in Lake Michigan was 32 degrees. So I said, by going into the water, I'm actually warming up.
That's
so
right.
I did it the first year. This past year, I chose to be a polar pledger and help support our Athlete Leadership Council members in their fundraising efforts.
At least you know what the experience is like anyway.
Yes.
Our guests from Special Olympics Wisconsin today are Chad Hirschner, president and CEO, and Brittany Wilson, an athlete leader for the organization. If you've got a question or a comment or an experience, we'd love to hear from you. Our lines are all open, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Brittany, we've talked a little bit about what Special Olympics has done for you physically. What about mentally?
Mentally, it's given me more self-confidence and a sense of belonging, because as a kid with an intellectual developmental disability, you don't feel as included in school, and being a part of Special Olympics is like being a part of a family. And like Chad said, each agency is like an individual household. There are so many different athletes from so many walks of life, and we all have the same story. It's just different interpretations.
Mm-hmm. You want to elaborate on that, Chad?
Sure. I would just say, you know, one of the things that I'm always inspired by with our athletes is their resiliency, their grit, their pure determination, and the sense of joy that they have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, through our Strong Minds program that we have, speaking of mental wellness, we have tools and tips that we provide to individuals with intellectual disabilities to help lower their anxiety, to help teach them breathing skills or coping mechanisms, and also how to recognize signs of depression. And know it's okay to speak up, to find that support, those safe places where they can get help that they need. But yeah, the grit, the determination, the resiliency is phenomenal.
Have you encouraged some of your acquaintances to join Special Olympics? And do you have any stories about that, Brittany?
I actually talked with four of my teammates about being athlete mentors because they were also athlete leaders. And I said, these four can be athlete mentors. And it went really good. And it felt like I grandfathered them into being bigger leaders. And that was really nice. I thought it was cool when I did that.
Definitely. So what's a athlete mentor then, Chad?
So one of the things that we do at Special Olympics Wisconsin is, obviously, we have a wonderful board of directors. We have 27 members on our board. And a couple years ago, we created a mentor program for our board. And the athletes are the mentors to the board members, not the other way around. So our athletes go through another training process to understand how boards of directors work, their areas of responsibility. The athlete leaders are intimately involved in the work we do every day. So we did a new strategic plan a couple years ago. I shared it with the Athlete Leadership Council at least three or four times, beginning, middle, and end, to have their voice in it. But the athlete mentors are meeting with our board members. They invite them to attend a practice of theirs. They talk about the strategic plan, how they're engaged, and it has truly been a wonderful experience. We've had board members that have been involved for 6 years, and they have reached out to me saying, oh my gosh, I never had that depth of understanding. When you have the experience of talking to an athlete, understanding their reality, challenges, opportunities, successes, it just deepens the connection to what we do.
Where do these innovative programs like this come from?
So the Athlete Mentor Program is something that we came up with here in the state of Wisconsin and created it on our own. Some of the other programs were fortunate, again, being part of an international organization, that there is curriculum provided to us from Special Olympics International that we can then implement. Mm-hmm. And then every year we also survey our athletes to say, what are things that you want to learn about? What are skills that you want to develop? And what can we do to provide extra training? So making sure we do kind of all three approaches there.
What qualifications does someone need to participate as an athlete in the games?
As an athlete, so again, it's real simple. All the qualifications are right on our website. So one of the things is we ask every athlete to have a medical screening because we want to know they're fit to compete, just like we would do in any other sport. So that's an important part of it. And then it's finding, you know, the right local program to connect with and determining which sports they want to try. So it's a pretty easy process, and it's all right there at SpecialOlympicsWisconsin.org.
So if you have a new person coming to one of your practices, Brittany, what is that experience like for them?
Of course, it's a new experience in unknown territory, and they are going to be a little gun shy to speak, which is understandable. And after a while, they get used to being around groups of people, and eventually they open up.
And do they get, there's coaches, I'm assuming, for all the teams, right, Chad?
Yeah.
Okay. So then when they come, the coaches, do they get to work one-on-one with them? Do they have other athlete leaders like yourself help them out just to kind of get them into the swing of things? How does that work?
We definitely have one-on-one with the athletes in case they're really gun shy, or in case they feel that they're not getting the hang of the sport. So then we pull them to the side and give them the fundamentals of how it works. And then eventually they'll grow their own shell, and then they can be established with their individual rapport. And I think I'm using that word right. I heard it yesterday when I had the presentation. So
You got it. And part of it too is we have coaches that have been volunteers for 10, 15, 20, 40 years. We have other individuals who are maybe they're a collegiate athlete and they want to give back. And so they may sign up to be a coach during that period of time. It's also too, we have a really incredible training program for anybody that wants to be a coach. So you don't have to feel like I need to know everything and have been a former college athlete in basketball. No, we have the training in place. Our rules are sometimes adapted for our Special Olympics athletes, and so can walk anybody through that process so they can be the best coach to help support the athletes with their needs as well.
So how many coaches do they have per team? Is that how you set it up? So,
yep, it's by team, and again, it just depends on the sport. So we have over, I think we're right around 3,000 trained coaches that support our athletes all across the state every year. And again, like many of our athletes, the coaches may do multiple sports. Or a coach may just say, I can do basketball or I can do golf and select whatever sport works for their schedule. So about 3,000 trained coaches.
How often do you practice, Brittany? I mean, you're in a lot of different sports, but how often do you actually get out there and get to play?
Most sports are once a week, some are twice a week. It all depends on the sports season and the areas that they're offered.
And where are the practices held?
They're all different rec centers and MPS schools.
Okay. And is that, do you have to usually pay for that, Chad, or are those given to the community?
It sometimes depends. So sometimes we have, you know, partnerships with some YMCAs across the state, so they will provide their facilities at no charge. There are other times where we do need to pay for facilities to rent for practices, depending on, you know, not everybody has volleyball courts or has, you know, softball fields. So there are times where, yes, the resources are that we need to secure those venues.
And is there any kind of a charge for the athletes?
There is not a charge for athletes to participate. So, mm-hmm. You know, this is something that we never want that to be a financial barrier. And that's where part of the fundraising that we do is to make sure that it is accessible for everyone.
Yeah. And you get uniforms?
Yep. Athletes get uniforms. And again, it's always fun when you're at a state game. So I know Brittany's team at Team Milwaukee gets really creative and come up with some really great uniforms. So it's fun to see everybody there. Because again, part of being an athlete is showing up as an athlete. Mm-hmm. So you feel at your best when you have a good uniform, right, Brittany?
Yeah.
And you must have a lot of different uniforms because you're in a lot of different sports, right?
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of different uniforms with different sports.
So how is the competition done then? Is it like... is it men and women, or are there age brackets, or how is that organized, Chad?
So it's all based on, just like the regular Olympics, it's all based on qualifying times. So for instance, if we are doing swimming, we don't separate by gender, we separate by qualifying times. So the athletes that might be in eight lanes of the pool, their qualifying times are within a certain range that any one of them has the potential to win gold.
Well, that totally makes sense. We should maybe try that in regular sports, right? That
yes.
would be interesting.
Yes.
I'd like to see that, actually. So we probably have people who are out there thinking to themselves, gosh, you know, this sounds wonderful. How do I become a volunteer?
Yes. So again, the best way to become a volunteer is visit our website, SpecialOlympicsWisconsin.org. And like I said, we do 220 plus events a year. So there are activities happening all over the state. So if you want to sign up to volunteer in your community for a regional activity, that's an easy way to do that. Our state games move around, and that's obviously where we have the highest concentration of athletes and greatest need. So, you know, we have that opportunity there as well.
And you said you're in Wausau this summer, is that right?
This summer we're going to Wisconsin Dells
for our fall games. Right. Okay.
So we will be there the weekend after Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. And so if somebody wants to sign up for that, is there still room for them?
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. You can go right to the website and click on events and you'll find those links right there.
Okay. So what kind of a personality is best suited for these kinds of opportunities to volunteer?
I think it's somebody that just wants to bring their whole heart and their whole selves to this amazing work. And also, too, it's just having that heart of service and that willingness to give back and openness to meet and engage with these extraordinary athletes.
And for coaches, is that a different place to sign up, or is it all kind of at the same place on your website, I'm assuming?
Yep, on the website, yep. We have a separate area there for coaches that people could figure that out there mm-hmm. as well, too.
Okay. Well, that sounds easy enough. Brittany, how were you encouraged to maybe get out of your comfort zone so that you can maybe perform at your very highest level? What were some of the coaches' advice to you?
The advice they would give me is the oath. Let me win, but if I cannot win, let me be brave in the attempt. And each step you make is an attempt at a ribbon or an award you want or a medal at a state game.
And that's so.
And always have good sportsmanship.
I was wondering about that. I mean, how competitive or supportive are the teams for each other?
They are definitely super supportive. And our VP of marketing communications, Chad, Addie Teeters, mm-hmm. she told me during bowling season how I was really extremely positive to my teammates, which was very true. And I would be their cheering section while playing myself. And just giving positive affirmations and saying, you got this, buddy. Keep up the progress. Let's take it home.
Yep. And I was at our summer games, and I think our athletes were doing a 100-meter dash. And one of the athletes had started off. His feet just got tangled, and unfortunately, he fell down. Everyone else that was around him stopped to make sure that he was okay. And I was, meanwhile, off to the medical tent to get some attention. I came back. He got up, had blood coming down his shoulder, his kneecap was scraped, and just ran for it across the finish line. The eruption from the crowd was, I get goosebumps just talking about it. That's the sportsmanship that we see at Special Olympics.
That is so inspiring. We're talking with our guest from the Special Olympics Wisconsin, Chad Hirschner is president and CEO, and Brittany Wilson is an athlete leader for Special Olympics. We'd love to hear from you. No calls yet today, but we'd like to hear what you think of Special Olympics. Has it meant something to you, your family? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And I hope you can join us tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show. David Drake and Jamie Knack are going to be back, and they're going to tell us about just how close armadillos are to crossing into Wisconsin. Plus, there are some citizen science opportunities, and the fall migration is beginning. So I hope you can join us for that. Right now, we are talking about Special Olympics. Chad, before we go to our caller, we were talking about volunteers. What kind of jobs do volunteers volunteer for?
Right. So it's a whole range of things. Volunteers can volunteer to help with setup or tear down. They can volunteer to be timekeepers at swimming or track. We also have opportunities at registration. Awards is a great way to volunteer. So you get to be there and hand out medals and ribbons to these amazing athletes and celebrate them in their moment of victory, or volunteering at some of the actual events. So you might be right at the side of where they're doing javelin or shot put, and helping with those activities too.
Great. We do have a caller who is a volunteer, apparently. Hi, Joan in Hobart. Can you tell us what your experience was like?
It was just wonderful. I am not currently a volunteer because
I'm 82 years old and can't do all the things that I used to do. But my dear high school friend, Betty Pritchard, who is no longer with us, had her little brother was a member of the community of challenged people. And so I would go with them every summer to the, I don't know if we even called it Special Olympics, but it was all games and competition. And it's so long ago that, I mean, I went for 4 years with her in the summer, and I just loved it. And the story about the boy that got up and ran, that someone just told, across the finish line with injuries, was so what I experienced. I at one race, a boy was way ahead of the little boy who fell, and he went right back and picked the boy up, and they ran together across the finish line holding hands. It was such an inspirational experience for me, and I was a teacher for 42 years, and I just never forgot those summers that I didn't teach special ed, but I taught theater and directed plays and things like that. But and I hate to even tell this, but for some reason, when we took a class in college, mind you, I started college in 1959, they had a big assembly where, although the kids didn't seem to mind, I guess they kind of liked it, but they would bring out kids with different disabilities. And one of them was the boy, one of the boys that was at the camp when I was. And this was 4 years later when I was in college, a senior in college. And I was way in the back of the auditorium, and he was on, you know, on the stage. And he remembered me. He saw me, and he waved at me, and I waved and blew kisses, and he waved. And there was, I don't know how many hundreds of students.
That's amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Joan, for sharing all that with us. That's wonderful. I'm sure you get lots of stories like that, Chad.
Well, and Joan brings up an important point, too, of the work that Special Olympics Wisconsin does in our Unified Champion Schools program. So, you know, we have evolved in our country in our thinking of we used to almost segregate individuals with intellectual disabilities. Now the work we do at Special Olympics Wisconsin is how do we create those unified champion schools? So we have a program where it is having students with and without intellectual disabilities come together. So they do all school assemblies, they participate in leadership activities, and they do sports. So it's awesome when you see the captain of the girls' basketball team saying, hey, these are my friends, let's spend time with these awesome individuals. So we're really making change there. We have 116 unified champion schools in the state of Wisconsin, and that ranges from elementary all the way through college. So that's how we truly make transformational change, too.
I can see that. Let's go back to the phones. We have Kim in Madison. Go right ahead, Kim.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share, if there's any parents out there that are nervous, because I'm not a nervous person, and I was nervous about Sedona getting involved with Special Olympics, but she did get involved with the Cottage Grove area, and she was in basketball, and I have to tell you, our daughter has some very unusual challenges. Some call it a gift, but spiritual challenges. And I have to say the coaches and the administration understood her needs and made some exceptions. The bottom line is these people will help you get your child involved as long as it's not a safety issue. They will do everything they can. And one of our coaches, Snuffy, in Cottage Grove, was just, to this day, it's very difficult to put into words what he meant to our daughter. And she's 29, and she's never done anything like this. And she got a bronze medal the first time she went out for basketball, and that is hung proudly in her room. So don't hesitate. Call. Go through it. Go through the application process. It's worth it.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Kim. What are your thoughts when you hear that, Chad or Brittany?
Well, it's the first thing I did was you've seen me wipe a tear from my eye.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Again, that is just, we are so blessed to have such great team members, both on staff and coaches, that truly are here to create that sense of connectedness and belonging and help others unlock their gifts and understand challenges that they have and make this an environment where they feel safe and connected. So that just, you know, always touches you.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sorry, Brittany, you were going to add something.
Oh, no, it was a great story. It's really inspiring.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. The next caller is Peter in Stevens Point. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi there. I work special ed in Stevens Point for over 20 years, about half in elementary and half in junior high. And it was always just amazing when we'd have these track meets or even in gym class. Even if a kid came in last, he was just smiling. She was just smiling ear to ear. It was just cheerful to see.
Peter, did that have any effect on the other athletes on your team or in your class?
I think they just all tried their best, and they all shared the fact that I tried my best, and no one was, hey, look at me, look at me. It was just a team effort, pretty much.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that with us, Peter. Chad, did you have anything to add to that?
I would say, too, you know, when you're at state games and you see some athletes and they may win fourth place or fifth place, and some of our athletes are highly competitive and they might be disappointed that they got fourth place or fifth place. And we also remind them that out of 14,600 people, you made it to state games and you were here competing in this sport. So to get fourth place is something that should be celebrated and recognized and honored. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you too, the skills of our athletes, I played golf with some of our athletes, and they are way better golfers than I will ever be. So they are highly competitive and highly trained, too.
Wonderful. Brittany, have you had a chance to show some of your athletic abilities with people who aren't in the Special Olympics? Have you? What was that experience like?
So, like, any of your unified experiences, Brittany, that you've done? Have you done any unified teams or unified activities that you've done?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't done any unified sports. It sounds cool.
And just quickly, Chad, what does that mean? Is that you're putting other teams together?
So unified means that, you know, anybody could sign up. We have some sports out of our 19 that are unified sports. So it pairs people with and without intellectual disabilities on teams.
Okay.
So somebody could say, hey, I want to sign up and we're going to play unified bocce together.
Gotcha.
Sometimes it's parents or guardians or friends or people in the community that say, this is another way I can get involved. So all of those unified sports are also on our website as well. And that's another way to be supportive of Special Olympics and our amazing athletes.
Wonderful. So many opportunities. I want to thank you both for being with us today and sharing what your work has been like and hopefully inspiring some of our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you for your hospitality.
You bet. Well, our guests are from Special Olympics Wisconsin, Chad Hirschner, president and CEO, and Brittany Wilson, an athlete leader, all for Special Olympics Wisconsin. Stay with us. Ah, so wiggle. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Are you enjoying this year's Olympic Games? Well, I'm here to remind you that when the current athletes leave Paris, the Paralympic athletes will be taking their place. And we have one of those athletes with us. Jeremy Meyer is our guest. He's a member of Team USA's men's wheelchair basketball team and a graduate of UW-Whitewater's wheelchair basketball program. What are your questions for this high-level athlete? Wondering about what it's like to be part of Team USA or the work he did to get there? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Jeremy, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for being with us. We really appreciate it. I'm sure that you are practicing like crazy right now. Is that true?
Yes, we have got about 10 or 11 days until we travel over to Paris. So right now the training is really ramped up and the whole team is just dialing it in. So we're ready to compete once we arrive in Paris.
And where are you doing your practicing?
So fortunately for me, I'm still in the Wisconsin area with about 6 to 8 other Wisconsinites that will be representing Team USA. So we all kind of get together on the weekends, on like Saturdays and Sundays, where we can get in some really good scrimmaging and gameplay.
Well, what's UW-Whitewater's connection to wheelchair basketball at the Paralympic Games?
So there are about 6 gentlemen on the men's side of things that are all graduates or current students of UW-Whitewater. And then we have the women's head coach is a former employee of UW-Whitewater. She used to coach the UW-Whitewater women's wheelchair basketball team. And then we have about 3 women on the women's side of Team USA that will be representing UW-Whitewater as well. So Whitewater is really known for developing athletes and getting them to that next level of basketball.
Yeah, that's amazing because you just don't even think about that, you know, a fairly small college in the Midwest. Why is it so successful, I guess, is the question.
I think the coaches who kind of started the program and founded it, they built a really good foundation of culture, and all of the athletes that have come through there and became successful, we've all kind of bought into that culture and that idea of success. A lot of it is the coaches want us to win at life. They want us to be successful on the wheelchair basketball court, but they also want us to be successful at life as well. So one big thing that we learn there is just, you know, translating all that hard work and discipline and applying it to our everyday lives to become just as successful.
Now, you're from Iowa, right?
Correct, yeah.
So had you heard about Whitewater's program well before you decided to go there, or was it fairly new to you?
So growing up playing wheelchair basketball, UW-Whitewater was always a school that us young kids talked about. Every year they hosted a week-long summer camp where we could come stay on campus, live in the dorms for a few days, and learn basketball from the best players in the country. So that's kind of where my first few introductions of UW-Whitewater was. And then when looking to go to school, I had known about UW-Whitewater because of my camps, and I had a really great relationship with the current coach at the time. And then it kind of seemed like a no-brainer to go to UW-Whitewater because all the pieces kind of fit together for me.
What brought you to the wheelchair basketball in the first place?
So when I was 9 years old, I was struck by a drunk driver riding my bicycle, which led me to be a full-time wheelchair user. And once I became a wheelchair user, I thought my athletic career was over. So I was fortunate enough to have a recreation therapist at my rehabilitation hospital introduce wheelchair basketball to me. And that's kind of what got me going was her introduction of that sport. So that's kind of where my conception of wheelchair basketball began.
And had you been a basketball player beforehand?
Yes. So the last sport or organized sport I played before getting injured was able-bodied basketball. So after I was injured, that was kind of the last sport that was real fresh in my mind. So my priority was figuring out a way that I would still be able to play basketball after my injury.
Mm-hmm. And for those who have never seen a game of wheelchair basketball, you have to watch it because it is intense. And it is really like, it's kind of scary the way you guys go at it. Just so much fun to watch. What's it like when you're in the thick of things?
It's pretty intense. It's very, very competitive. The added element of a chair and the contact that comes from the chair is very loud, very noisy. Everybody's communicating very loud. So when you're in the midst of like a very competitive game, it's a very great feeling. It lets you know that you still are able to like have that competitive drive, even though you are a disabled athlete or you play an adaptive sport. It's a very liberating feeling to know that I can still go out here and compete and really get after it with like-minded individuals.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the differences between the basketball for people in a wheelchair or those who are able-bodied? What are some of the main differences? There were different rules.
Yeah, so one of the biggest rule changes is there's like no double dribble, so I can dribble the basketball, pick the ball up, put it on my lap, take a push, and then dribble the basketball again, and I will not be called for a double dribble. With an added element of the wheelchair, there are other fouls that can be committed based off of, like, your chair positioning. And then another pretty key rule difference would be the dribbling aspect of it, where for every two pushes of my wheelchair, I have to put the ball on the ground and dribble it before I take that third push. Because if I push my chair three times in a row without any dribbling, I would be called for a traveling violation.
Okay. And the net, is that set at the same height?
Yep. So in college, you play on a college level floor. Everything is the same, like, three-point line is the same distance. All of the hoops are 10 foot high. Same rules, regulations, two 20-minute halves in college. You have a 35-second shot clock. All of that type of stuff is still similar and the same as it is in able-bodied college basketball.
Okay. Now, I guess that UW-Whitewater won the national championship in men's wheelchair basketball this year. What's the significance of that win?
It's a pretty big win, and pretty big win for the university as well. We have a new coach, or he is in his second year of being the coach at Whitewater. And so to come out in your second year and kind of blow out the college division is pretty impressive and significant. We've had a handful of coaching changes within the past three-ish years. So getting a guy to come in and really kind of take that program and bring it back to the culture it was 15 to 20 years ago was pretty awesome to see. And it kind of showed the proof is in the pudding that they needed to get back to that type of culture, and ultimately they won a championship. So,
and that was the 14th in the program history. There's not a lot of programs that can say that.
Nope. So a lot of people in the wheelchair basketball world would consider UW-Whitewater to be like a Duke or a Kentucky of wheelchair basketball. So if you really want to go to a university where you're going to get prepared to play at a high-performing level or that next level, which could be professionally if you choose to do so, you're more than likely going to come to Whitewater to, you know, develop. Mm-hmm.
So there is a professional, there's Paralympics, there's also a professional league?
Yep. So there's a professional league that takes place predominantly in Europe. And I know a lot of guys after college, if they're wanting to make a Paralympic team or some type of national team, they may pursue a career professionally in Europe to try to continue to develop their skills and ultimately make their selected national team.
Okay. Well, let's talk about those upcoming Paralympics. Now, they start on August 28th. Who are the top competitors on the men's basketball side?
I would say a lot of eyes are going to be on us. I think everybody is wanting to see the Team USA kind of make history and win 3 gold medals in a row. A lot of our competition is going to mainly be from probably like the Great Britain team. And on our pool, on our side of the pool, we have Netherlands and Australia. I think they will kind of give us a pretty good run for our money. I think ultimately, though, our team is very deep. We have a great lineup of individuals that are ready to compete at any time. So I think if we go out there and execute the way that we know how to do, there might not be that much competition for us.
Oh, I like that. Great attitude. Now, is this your first Paralympics game?
Yep. So this is my first go around with the whole national team process. I was selected on the team back in 2022, and I've done the whole quad is what we call it, where I went to our first qualifying competition, and now I'm going to our final competition, which is the Paralympics.
Okay. So how are you feeling? I mean, you've got to be feeling a lot of different things right now.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. I'm trying to keep an open mind. I don't want to have any type of expectations, or I don't want to anticipate stuff. I kind of want to go in there and enjoy the experience in the moment, so then I can, you know, reflect on it when I'm gone and have a trip of a lifetime or a experience of a lifetime. So.
Absolutely. Well, maybe we can talk to you when you get back just to see what that experience was like, because that would be great to check in. Did you have this in your mind as you were getting more and more into the basketball that you might get to go to the Paralympics?
When I was younger, I kind of picked up the sport pretty quickly. I've always been a relatively good shooter. That's kind of my role on the team today is I go out there and I sit on the offside, and when the ball gets passed to me, my game plan or my objective is just to shoot the ball and try and make it. With having that skill, I was always told growing up that like there was always going to potentially be an opportunity for me to maybe get to that next level, but it was always going to be in my control, whether I kind of just loafed off and just rode the confidence and the high of everybody telling me I could potentially make a team, or if I was going to choose to work hard, stay disciplined, get into the gym, and sacrifice those things as a young adult in order to get to this point. So it was always kind of an idea in the back of my mind, but to actually kind of see it all come to life has been a pretty surreal and full circle moment for me.
It must be, and your friends and family must be so happy for you.
Yes, my family and friends are very proud. I always love to tell people that being on the national team is not for me. It is for my mother to be able to wear it as her personality trait, because she loves to tell everybody that talks to her about how her son is going to be a future Paralympian, which I'm so proud I have given my mom that opportunity to really be proud of me. So it's pretty awesome.
That is very awesome. Is she going to get to go with you?
Yes. So my mother and sister will be there in Paris watching me play, which will be pretty amazing.
I'd say what a trip of a lifetime for sure. So what are you doing besides playing basketball? You have to do a lot of other stuff to get yourself in shape. What's your routine like?
So during the week, I will have like 5 strength training workouts. So I lift weights once a day up until Saturday, and then Sunday will be kind of like my rest day from weightlifting. But once I do my workouts in the morning, I will do some work in the middle of the day and in the afternoon. And then later in the evening, I will go into the gym where I focus on like more chair skill stuff or more like basketball related things. So in the morning, I spend time in the weight room doing strength training. And then in the evening, I'll spend time on the basketball court honing in those skills. And then usually on like Saturday and Sunday, all of us Whitewater and Wisconsin guys will get together and we'll scrimmage for 2 or 3 hours usually.
Wow. And you're working full time too, I'm assuming?
Yes. So I work for a nonprofit adaptive sports company called the Ability Center, which is located in like the Milwaukee County area. And they've been extremely supportive of me in this process. They've been very, very helpful and helping me get to this point. They're very flexible with my work schedule and my training schedule, and they have done everything that they can do to help me get to this point. So I'm very, very grateful for a company that understands and believes in my hopes and dreams.
Yeah, that's wonderful that that happened for you. As far as what about your nutrition, what you eat? Any typical athlete, I'm sure, has that same question, but what's your regimen like?
Yeah, so we regularly meet with a nutritionist that is a part of our team. She kind of helps us all develop our own type of diet or our own type of nutrition plan based on our personal goals and our long-term goals. So that's been a very useful and helpful tool. When you're getting closer to the games or when we get closer to like traveling, hydrating is a huge thing that we do, because typically when you travel, you don't drink as much fluid, you don't eat as well on the road. So when we're home or we're at like a training site is when we really like dial in our nutrition, stick to a pretty good plan and try to hydrate as much as possible, which then helps our recovery and keeps us ready to rock and roll.
And now let's talk about your wheelchair. I mean, it has got to be so specialized to do what you do. Those turns are amazing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I like to consider my sports chair like a different pair of shoes for me. So when you're like casually walking around, you have a specific pair of shoes. But then when you go on to the sports side of things, you might wear a different pair for basketball. You might wear, when you go play soccer, you throw on some soccer cleats. And so my everyday chair compared to my wheelchair basketball chair, there are 2 different styles of chair. So when I get into my wheelchair basketball chair, it's like I'm almost sliding into like a glove that is specifically measured and built for me. So it's they're very, very specific to the individual that is using them. And our wheels are like a little bit wider, bent out. We call that like camber. We have a lot of camber on our sports chairs. That helps us stay more stabilized. It allows us to turn quicker, allows us to cover more ground on the basketball court. We are actually strapped into our sports chairs when we play because, as you know, there's a hefty amount of contact when we play. So if our chair and I are connected, that chair takes a good portion of the blow or the compact. And if we were to fall over, our chair is going to stay connected to us and it's not going to roll the opposite way that we're going, because then that would just take too much time for everybody to get in and out of their chairs if we fall over. So It's like a literally like a glove that we're buckled into, and it fits us perfectly.
And I imagine it's not exactly, well, it's probably a little bit more expensive than those tennis shoes are. Do you have sponsors that help you out with that?
Yes. So I am fortunate enough to have a great sponsor. Top End Sports is who sponsors me and provides me with all of my adaptive sports equipment. They also sponsor a few of us other Wisconsin people that are going to Paris, and they rolled out this new line of chairs for us where they're all like a titanium frame with some carbon fiber on it. So they're very light, they are very athletic looking, and they really help take our game to the next level. So without Top End Sports being a huge part of my adaptive sports career, I don't know if I would be able to be to where I am now, because they go above and beyond to make sure that their athletes are taken care of.
Is that the case with most of your teammates too?
Yes and no. A lot of our more established athletes that have been on the national team for a few years and have gone to recent Paralympic games, they are all sponsored. They all have some adaptive sports equipment company that provides them with their chairs as well. But as younger guys or the guys that are newer to the team, we may not have a sponsor right away. So we may have to come out of pocket for our chairs, or we might have to apply for like some type of Challenged Athletes grant that will help offset the cost.
Okay. Well, it does sound like you're very fortunate, and it sounds like you're going to have a wonderful time. What are you looking forward to most?
I'm looking forward to the athlete village experience, the team process experience, and all of the things that come with being a Paralympic athlete. All the glimpses of everything I've seen on TV and all the Olympics that are happening, it just makes me more and more impatient, and I just want to get to Paris today so I can experience all those things as a high-performance athlete. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm hoping I get to experience sitting on the podium with a gold medal around my neck.
Well, we do too, and we wish you and your team and your teammates the best of luck. I'm sure you all do really, really well. Bring home whatever medal you can, but gold would be nice.
Yeah. Will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeremy. We've been talking to Jeremy Meyer II. He is a member of Team USA's men's wheelchair basketball team. He's also a graduate of UW-Whitewater's wheelchair basketball program. Stay with us, because coming up right after this break, it's a roundup of the latest results from Wisconsinites at the Olympic Games. Ah, those timpanis. The 2024 Summer Olympic Games are well underway, and today we'll talk about a few Olympians with Wisconsin ties. I'm Jill Nadeau. This is WPR News. J.R. Ratcliffe is with us for the rest of the show. He's a sports writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who's been covering the Olympics. Which Olympic sports are you enjoying the most? Are you following a particular Wisconsin athlete? Why do you love watching the Olympics? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. JR, thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely. No problem. Happy to be here.
So what's it like covering the Olympics? And sometimes there seems like there's so much going on. I mean, how do you even prioritize whatever your stories are going to be?
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I'm not physically in Paris. I'm sitting on the desk in Milwaukee, so it's not
darn.
It's really not grueling as some of my colleagues who've had the, you know, amazing opportunity to go over, you know, over wherever those games are being held. We don't have anybody in Paris, but you know, really, it's just about keeping track of the Wisconsin storylines. There are many. There are many athletes. There aren't that many who are maybe in contention for a medal, but there are a few. So it's pretty easy to follow those storylines and just keep your ear to the ground and keep looking to see, you know, a lot of this stuff happens before any of us wake up in the morning. So it's
true.
You know, it's about being up early and double checking and make sure that there are no storylines that are worth pursuing. My job is the trending sports reporter. So quite often it's viral stuff. It's stuff that's caught on for one reason or another. And it's pretty easy to tell where those things are.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on in the Olympics, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what is it that you think that the Olympics, why does it captivate us so much every 2 years?
I mean, it does on several levels. I mean, obviously there are sports that we are familiar with, like basketball, even track and field to a degree. And it is fun to marvel at the skill, gymnastics and swimming, to marvel at the skill and the ability of these athletes to compete on an international stage. There's a lot of stories that we don't know. You know, if there was a feature on Giannis Antetokounmpo, for example, we know Giannis here in Milwaukee. We've followed him for years. We know his story. To some people, they're probably sick of his story, but how much do we really know about, you know, Kenny Bednarik, Rice Lake sprinter, who's, you know, who was in the 100 final, will probably be in the 200 final. We've seen him before. He's won a silver medal before, so he's not an unknown, but we don't spend a lot of time with him, you know, in these 4 year stretches. So there's a lot of fresh stories, and not just Wisconsin people either, obviously, just the athletes in general. It's a chance for us to pretend to be experts about sports that we do not know anything about, or maybe didn't even know existed. I wonder how many people across the United States said, wait, breakdancing is in the Olympics? You know, that's something that I think everybody came to very short notice. So it gives us a chance to explore things we haven't seen before, to hear stories we haven't heard before. You don't often get that opportunity in the pro sports landscape because everything is dissected and studied and analyzed. And this is an opportunity for something totally brand new. And it comes at you rapid fire, you know, like how many medals are given out a day? How many events are on at the same time? It's just a, you know, it's just a very quick burst over a 2 week window.
Yeah, for sure. And I was this years old when I found out there was breakdancing. Yeah. So,
yep, there you are. That's the next.
Yeah, that's really crazy. I love it.
There are always weird sports that show up on the program.
aren't there? And then there's kind of weird commentators like Snoop Dogg. What are you thinking about him doing some commentary?
No, he came to the Milwaukee Brewers game a few weeks ago in early July. Was that? I'm not sure in the timeline, but the aura that man provides, like it lit up the clubhouse. Pro athletes gravitate toward him. He is a very unique, very different energy. I think his career arc in general is very unique, very different, and he is perfect for this, you know, a little bit of irreverence, a little bit of just awe-inspired, you know, kind of how we're all watching the Olympics, like, holy smokes, I can't believe it. You know, there's no emphasis on the technical, no emphasis on maybe the specifics of each sport, just this is really cool. I'm really happy to be here. And he conveys that awe to the rest of us in a really cool way. And obviously he's already a known commodity and we already want to spend time with Snoop Dogg to some degree. This is an unusual venue for him. And I think he's perfect. I mean, if you see him host the Puppy Bowl with Martha Stewart on Super Bowl Sunday, you would already know that when it comes to unconventional sports, Snoop Dogg should absolutely be your guy.
Definitely. So let's get back to the actual Olympic events here. You recently wrote about the sprinter Kenny Bednarik, who's from Rice Lake. What was his childhood like in Wisconsin? He's got a great story, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. He was born in Oklahoma. He was adopted along with his twin brother and brought to Rice Lake, Wisconsin. And I'm sure some listeners know where that is on the west side of the state, not super far from La Crosse, which is where they host the WIAA state track and field meet. And certainly that is one of the places where he became kind of, at least among prep sports writers, a household name a few years ago when he started lighting it up in setting records, including one in the 200 that I'm not sure anyone thought was going to be broken at any point in time by a former NFL running back named Michael Bennett, who played football at the University of Wisconsin. But he came in there and he was just a sight to behold. You know, he was a great 400 runner in particular. He's obviously making national headlines now in the 200 and 100. So it's a little bit shorter sprints, but just obviously one of a kind athlete. Played football at Rice Lake too, but track and field is where he stood out. Then he kind of disappeared a little bit because he didn't go the traditional four-year college route. He has said he didn't qualify academically, so he went to Indian Hills Community College in Iowa and sort of, again, got back on the radar, showing up and posting times that were among the best in the country at that moment, and worked his way up from there. And now he's a two-time Olympian and you know, he's obviously he's got a silver medal from the Tokyo 200 meters, and that event will be coming up on Thursday, the final on Thursday. So we'll see if he can pull in another medal.
So what can we expect to see?
I really like his chances. Now, Noah Lyles is the favorite. That's the guy who won the 100 meters in very dramatic fashion. I think one of the great moments of the Olympics thus far. Noah Lyles also loves the 200 more so than the 100. That's more of his event. Kenny Bednarik did face Lyles last year in the 200, or I should say last Olympics in the 200, and won. Lyles took the bronze, but Lyles has won, I think, like 17 straight international 200 events since then. So he is the favorite. He is on fire. And probably Noah Lyles will be the highest finishing American in that event. But Kenny Bednarik, I really like his chances. He had the fastest time in round one, which doesn't mean a whole lot, but still really nice time in round one for Bednarik. And I really think he is a guy who might sneak up on people a little bit. Not a lot of people are talking about him, as good as his times have been. He had the second fastest 100 time in the United States behind Lyles when they competed at the U.S. trials together. He took seventh in the 100, but I just really think people are sleeping on him a little bit, and that we might be surprised when that event rolls around.
Okay, it's something to look for sure. And speaking of Rice Lake, we have Steve on the line. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. What do you got for us?
Kenny Bednarik, what a super, super guy he is. I graduated with my son, and what a good, good kid. So I hope he wins it again. So,
all right. Well, thanks, Steve. We appreciate that. Is that what you've heard too, JR, that Kenny's a good guy?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know him personally. I won't deny it, but certainly reports are great. And if he has a pretty nice online social media presence. He has this Kung Fu Kenny persona that he has adopted that you can see in his social media accounts. And you know, I love his interviews. You know, he's down to earth. He's humble, but not unrealistic about how good he is. So it's kind of a nice mix that way. And he's not maybe as explosive as Noah Lyles is in terms of, you know, being demonstrative or whatever. And maybe that's more the flavor of, you know, I could see a lot of fans who prefer that. So I definitely, I'm definitely rooting for him. It's journalistic and, you know, objectivity or whatnot. Yeah, I kind of throw that out the window when the Olympics roll around. I'm obviously hopeful that he can impress the nation once again.
That would be great to see for sure. We were talking about Giannis a little bit ago with basketball and whatnot. And, you know, he's not playing for the U.S., of course. He's playing for Greece. What's been going on with basketball?
Yeah, today was the last day for Giannis Antetokounmpo. He played very, very well in these Olympics, and Greece got probably as far as they could have gotten. They went 1-2 in pool play in a very, very difficult pool against some of the best. I mean, Spain didn't make it out of the pool, and Spain at one point was the number two nation in the world in men's basketball recently. So I think it was a very difficult task. They had to face Canada, Spain, Australia. They beat Australia, which was really good, and they were just able to get into the knockout round, the final eight, which led to a match today against Germany, and Greece did not win. So Giannis is coming home back to the Milwaukee Bucks, presumably. He played in four games. He averaged more than 28 points per game. This is not as long as a regular NBA game. It's a little bit shorter. So that's a pretty impressive number. If you adjust for inflation, I guess it would easily clear 30 points per game. So he was really, he was a star, and his Greece teammates did the best they could. And I think probably had the best finish they could have hoped for. But they did not make it through to the semifinals. So those are coming up here in a couple of days. Team USA will play shortly, and they'll have their quarterfinal match as well. And we'll see how that comes out, because Team USA is obviously going to be one of the favorites to win. And I'm sure Bucks fans can breathe a sigh of relief. Giannis didn't get hurt. You know, he obviously had the injury at the end of the season. Going to the Olympics is his first action since then. He's coming home seemingly in one piece and should be good to go for the season.
That is an issue, isn't it, with some of these professional players playing in the Olympics? And if they get hurt, their teams aren't going to be too happy, are they?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think Bucks fans were really confronting this. Obviously, you know, Giannis speaks so glowingly of wanting to represent his country, wanting to be part of the Greece experience, things like that. So you can't in any way, you know, begrudge him for wanting to do that. But at the same time, Bucks fans, you know, like, he's not playing on behalf of the Milwaukee Bucks at this point. He wasn't able to play in the playoffs this season, had a pretty serious calf issue. So, you know, I'm sure if you're a Bucks fan, you don't want to see him possibly make that worse, because the, you know, if you do something really dramatic that could impact what happens next season, there's a pretty good chunk of time of rest here coming up before things really get going in earnest, you know, toward the end of September, early October. So he's got plenty of time to rest up, and it's I was hoping he'd go further. It would have been quite the story to have him kind of carry his team on his back and put up the numbers that he was putting up. But there are just too many talented teams in men's basketball.
Now, I've heard some reports that the basketball teams are actually pretty equal these days. I mean, the U.S. team used to waltz in and our dream team and kind of just assume they're going to take everything. But it's not like that this year, is it?
No, and it hasn't been for a while. It's one of the sports, and I'd say women's soccer is another one, where the United States used to have, you know, sort of a monopoly on that. They had the best players in the world, bar none. And it just got to a point where other nations, you know, nurtured their cultures and got better and better. I mean, you will see also many NBA players. The NBA in general is a very global game. So there are all kinds of stars. You know, you saw Nikola Jokic play for Serbia today, multiple, you know, three-time MVP. He's competing. He competed today. Australia is full of NBA players. Canada with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's one of the biggest names in the NBA right now. He's playing for Canada. Jamal Murray is there. So these teams are a lot of familiar names for those who follow the NBA anyway. But yes, we've come a long way from the dream team 1992, you know, the team full of legends where the USA could just walk over anybody. It's pretty equal. Now, USA is still very good. They are going to be among the favorites. Canada could easily win this whole thing. There's no doubt about that. I don't know if Serbia can with Jokic, but he's, you know, they're good. They're into the Final Four. So they're certainly a threat. And, you know, USA played some warm-up games and really struggled with some teams. South Sudan, a team that did not make the knockout round, really gave the U.S. a run for their money in one of the warm-up games. That's why you play those games. But the U.S. definitely learned that they're not going to walk over anybody, that's for sure.
And that's a good lesson to have early on. So we are talking about the Olympics with J.R. Radcliffe. He's a sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Do you have a question for him or do you have a comment about the games? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. Coming up tomorrow, David Drake and Jamie Nack are going to be back, and they're going to be talking about armadillos. That's right. They are getting closer to Wisconsin. We'll find out how close. Plus, we'll talk about some citizen scientist opportunities. And would you believe the fall migration is beginning? That's all tomorrow, starting at 11, right here. Right now, we're talking about the Olympics. And, JR, we were talking about basketball. One of the questions I had for you, so we've got Megan Gustafson, who was born in Wisconsin, and she's competing for Spain in the women's basketball. Now, how did that happen?
Yeah, that's an unusual one. There, most of the time when you have an athlete from the United States competing for another nation, there's some heritage involved, you know, parents who maybe first generation or something along those lines. That's not really what's happening here. Megan Gustafson is the all-time leading scorer in Wisconsin high school girls basketball history, career scorer. She played at South Shore High School. She's from Port Wing, Wisconsin, up near Lake Superior. She was sensational in college. She went to Iowa. She's kind of before Caitlin Clark, there was Megan Gustafson. She's a national player of the year, outstanding, you know, rebounder. She's a post player, inside player, rebounder, scorer, all that. She's had a nice career in the WNBA, but hasn't really gotten a foothold. I don't think her game really suits the WNBA. So she's played there since 2018, but she had played a little bit overseas in London, and had gotten in touch with the Spanish, you know, the Spanish Federation that runs basketball. Now, every team is welcome to have one naturalized citizen on their roster. They're allowed one naturalized player. And so that she started that process as early as last spring. She became a naturalized citizen of Spain. She is a member of the Spain national team, and she's doing very well. She's got a double-double, averaging a double-double, 17 points, 10 rebounds through the first three games. Spain is 3-0. They've won two of those games by 1 point. It's been nail-biters, and now they're in the quarterfinals. So this has been a wild time. You know, I completely missed that she was in the Olympics. I had been following all the different parties, and then all of a sudden Spain is playing some games. Like, wait, Megan Gustafson is on Spain? What did I miss? Is that our Megan Gustafson? And sure enough, I had just missed her, and she's a pretty high profile name. You know, we followed her a lot over the course of her career. So yeah, surprise, and having a very good Olympics so far. So we will see. Who knows? I mean, Team USA far and away in women's basketball the favorite to win, and probably will. I don't even know if they've ever lost a gold medal in women's basketball, but Spain, if they got on the podium, that would be wild. That would be really incredible.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about soccer. You had mentioned earlier that the women's soccer team used to kind of run away with things, but everything's a little bit more competitive. What's going on with Rose?
Oh, yeah. I'm checking the score right now because okay. as we're talking here. Yeah,
so if you don't want to know, plug your ears for a minute.
I will not reveal what I'm seeing between the United States and Germany. But, I mean, you even go back to their quarterfinal against Japan. They had to really work for it. You know, that was a 1-0 win in extra time. A beautiful goal by Trinity Rodman. They had to scratch and claw. And that's been the case in World Cups as well as the Olympics. The Americans are not the heavy, heavy favorite to walk away. They are still, again, like the men's basketball team, very good and probably among the favorites, but it's not a given that they're going to win. So these games are pretty meaningful. Rose Lavelle, who is from Ohio, but a University of Wisconsin alumna, she has been part of the U.S. national team for quite some time. She did have a goal in a World Cup final match that helped the United States defeat, I think it was the Netherlands that year. So she has been part of some really spectacular stuff. She's been there a while, and I know she had a shot on goal from what I saw earlier today that was saved, but she's been a mainstay. She's one of the fixtures on this team. So obviously there's a nice Wisconsin connection there. And, you know, I think the women's soccer team is one of the bigger, easier teams to root for. You know, everyone is kind of aware of some of these players because of World Cups, and it's fun to kind of get back in the hang of things. That my family was really excited for that win over Japan. We were following it very closely when she scored that goal. We were all freaking out. That was a cool moment.
That's always great, isn't it? When you have that connection, it makes it a little bit more interesting to watch, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is nice to have some familiar names, which is what you get in both basketball and soccer.
Okay, so you said you catch some of the trading or trending stories. Talk about Ali, is it Hore or?
Yeah, Hore is how you pronounce okay. it. Yes, he's from Australia, but he also went to the University of Wisconsin. There's a lot of UW athletes competing for other countries, including him, Adam Spencer, another Australian who was a distance runner who competed, Mo Ahmed, who competed in the 10,000 meters and just missed a medal so close for Canada. He also went to UW. But Ali, you know, there is a dark side to being sort of like exposed to the world sometimes. And Ali had a really tough Olympics, distance runner, and fell way back. He wasn't able to qualify for the finals in his race. And he revealed that he's been really struggling with some of the things he's read and seen on social media. And he's had a lot of people come to his defense, including Molly Seidel, who's from Wisconsin. She was a bronze medalist in the marathon in the Tokyo Olympics. Very, very famous moment there. Just to, you know, Molly has also spoken in the past about her struggles with anxiety and mental health. And these things are near and dear to her heart as well. And he said, you know, I had to delete my Instagram account because of all the things I was hearing and seeing, because I wasn't performing as well as people wanted me to. And that's a very tough thing. You know, obviously these athletes are, a lot of what they do is training on their own. So you can understand why they would want to be connected to the outside world, you know, and especially true for distance runners. So there's such a rich distance running community. And I imagine social media is a big part of that. But then to see these, you know, people who are, again, parachuting in and, you know, probably know a little bit about distance running, but don't follow it outside of the Olympics. And there's immediate disappointment when the person that you've been pulling for, maybe in your home nation, maybe not, but probably from your home nation, is underperforming. And so these athletes do put up with some of that. And he spoke about that and how upsetting that was to him. And it's really rattled his confidence. It hasn't been just the Olympics. It's dated back quite a bit. So he opened up about that a little bit. It has become a little bit of a story. And that's, you know, I wish you could just weed that out from the becoming a household name, if only for a week or two as an Olympian. It seems like it just kind of comes with the territory, unfortunately, and it's just a difficult part of the process.
And these Olympians, in most cases, obviously we're not talking about the NBA professionals, but they're not like getting paid millions of dollars to be representing their country. And it's got to be and they're young. Most of them are so young. It's got to be really hard.
You know, many of them do have some sort of sponsorship agreement, but, you know, it's only the great names that, you know, the Katie Ledeckis of the world that you're really familiar with. They're the only ones who've really broken through and are living well off of their, you know, off of their athletic achievements. These guys have to, you know, to train, they have to give up working 9 to 5 and then they need support, financial support, either from their family or through other means, you know, however they can get it. It's a very difficult thing to fund. And there's probably, you know, countless athletes who have not been able to continue competing because they haven't been able to afford it. So that's a very good point. This is something they give their lives to and sacrifice a ton. And, you know, you don't want to hear that, you know, somebody who's only seen them for 5 minutes can make a judgment about them and cause, you know, cause this sort of distress.
Yeah. And it's sad, but there are a lot of happy things going on. What are some of your favorite stories out of the Olympics so far?
You know, I really loved this is early on in the Olympics, the Team USA rugby won in a thriller. And do I know a lot about the rules of rugby? I mean, I could tell you the basics. That's about all I could do. You know, things are happening on the screen that I can't explain. And it's one of the sports where that's the case. And try to follow it as much as I can. There's a University of Wisconsin alumna on that team, 3-time Olympian named Aleph Kelter. She had a very good Olympics, but they won the bronze medal. They won it on a breakthrough, a breakaway, which is essentially the equivalent of a kickoff return for a touchdown in the NFL with like a minute to go. I mean, they just burst through the line. It's a discipline called rugby sevens. It's not as many people on the field as maybe like what you'd picture with traditional rugby. And so there's a lot of room to run. There's a lot of breakaways, and they busted up the middle and they scored just as time was running out. They win the match. Shocking. I believe it was New Zealand in the bronze medal game. Just a stunner. And then they ended up, coming away with a medal, which is the first time that's happened for that discipline for women. So in USA women's rugby. So that was really cool. I really enjoyed that one. Other than that, I'm loving the Snoop Dogg you mentioned that. That's certainly something that I've been following. I've been really keeping an eye on the track and field because of Kenny Bednarik. I really want to see that 200 come about. And obviously the track and field events are just fun in general. You know, anytime you got somebody coming from behind, like Femke Bol of the Netherlands when she upset the Americans in the mixed relay, like there's a lot of really fun things that you can see with your own eyes. I love that.
What about the gymnast, the male gymnast with the glasses too? I mean, he's
yes. That's definitely one of the biggest stories of the Olympics. The pommel horse guy, I believe. And you know, if I tried to pronounce his name, I'd probably do it wrong.
I was hoping you'd do it because I wasn't gonna go there.
Steven Dorshik, yeah, he's one of the great stories of the Olympics so far, and a guy who is. I mean, I think this is, you know, like gymnastics is very demanding and you obviously have to be incredibly talented to do any of that stuff. You know, he has a very specific event. He doesn't even train on the other events. It is just this. And this thing, you know, it's like a long snapper in football. You know, you sometimes forget the long snapper is even on the team because he only does one thing. But then when he doesn't do it right, it's, you know, what's up with the long snapper? But no glory. But this guy gets the glory for doing the one thing. He is the specialist who got the team the bronze medal in the team event. And then he gets the bronze medal for himself in the individual events. Great interview. I mean, that's what the Olympics are all about. He is absolutely what the Olympics are all about.
Yeah, I think that you definitely hit it right there. It's like we love to see those stories so much. What about some of the new games that have been introduced or new sports? Any favorites there?
I haven't seen the breakdancing. That's the thing that I really wanted to see, and I haven't seen it yet. So I'm not even up to date on the schedule. I assume that's still to come because I haven't seen that. I've been watching a little bit of the skateboarding and the BMX biking. That's not brand new, but it's still cool to see, you know, the surfing in Tahiti. Obviously, that's not new at all, but it's very different because it is literally on the other side of the world from Paris, France. And watching, there was a humpback whale, by the way, that surfaced today during the surfing competition. So there's this great shot of the humpback whale up in the air, and people are surfing or like getting ready to surf in the
What country
foreground.
Was he surfing for? That's what we want to know.
Oh, that's a good question. He, like everyone else, is probably a little confused why Tahiti and France are connected, but you know, whatever. They're just swimming around. They're just being dudes. That's all they can really do. I haven't really engaged with many of the other, you know, anything that's too out of the ordinary. My kids have really enjoyed watching table tennis, which is completely different from how you play table tennis in the basement of your friend's house. It is athletic. It is speed. Yes. It is intense. So that has been very fun as well. There's always something on. There's always something on that's like super interesting that you'll know, and something on the other channels that are just like, what is this synchronized diving? And again, that's something that's been around for a long time, but it's always something that's like, I want to watch this just because I just want to see what it looks like.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, JR. We really, really appreciate you being with us today, and have fun with the rest of the games.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Take care.
J.R. Radcliffe is a sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I want to thank you for joining us today, and I want to thank our team, our producers, Claire Neipert and Joel Pattenaud, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. I'm Executive Director Jill Nadeau, and I'm in for our host, Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow.